Welcome to Biz Bevs and Bites in the Burke and Beyond. Your hosts are Cindy Ellick and Kelly Commander. Each episode will feature a business topic and the best beverages or bites in the Pittsburgh region. Kelly and Cindy strive to bring engaging and educational business content to their listeners while highlighting Pittsburgh's exciting food scene. It's the happiest hour. Reserve your table today by visiting the show at bizbevsbites.com and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform.
Hey everybody, welcome to Biz, Bevs, and Bites. Today we are with Paul Farriga of WordRight PR. Paul learned storytelling by writing and editing more than 20,000 stories during two decades as a journalist before going into public relations. He's quite literally written the book on storytelling, Finding Your Capital S Story, Why Your Story Drives Your Brand. The career path that Paul traveled to PR is a story in itself. Get this, guys. He has been a racetrack photographer, a theater usher, an investigative journalist, a wannabe musician, a classical radio host, a broadcast journalist, a White House correspondent, and an editor. Not sure if we can follow that up with anything else, but I'm going to try. Paul spent several years at the global agency Ketchum Public Relations, where his clients included Alcoa, Bridgestone, Firestone, and Rutgers University. When he founded WordRight in 2002, Paul's experience in journalism and PR convinced him that there was a better way to deliver results, and that was through storytelling.
At WordRight, Paul ponders the question, why should someone consider hiring us, working with us, or partnering with us? The answers to those questions help him chart the next chapter in WordRight's evolving capital S story. Before you had a brand, you had a story. The reason why people want to buy from you, work for you, partner with you, or invest in you. That's why WordRight takes a distinctive approach to marketing communications. Story crafting in this process, they uncover your capital S story, the authentic, engaging, and persuasive story that is uniquely yours. Welcome to the show, Paul Farriga.
Well, thanks. Thanks, Cindy. Thanks, Kelly, for having me. Absolutely. Great to be here.
Absolutely.
Thank you for joining us today.
Yes, thank you so much. Sin, I don't know about you, but I want to go back to the little paragraph about all of Paul's experience and how he ended up here where he is today. And
right.
That's a lot of different things that you've done in your life. Tell us a little bit about just your past and your work history and your career.
Sure. Well, you know, if you're old, you do a lot of things. So, okay. Next question. No, part of being a storyteller is learning to understand the nuances in people's lives that make them who they are today. I was a theater usher and a racetrack photographer. Those were high school jobs. When you string them all together, it sounds a little more impressive than, you know, I was an usher at the Cineplex. Investigative journalist, so that's, a for real big boy, put on your big boy pants type job. And so is White House correspondent.
Wow.
I think one of the things that all of us do when we consider our own careers is we don't give ourselves enough credit for all the different things we've done. I've always been around writing and communicating, except music is communication, and I originally wanted to be a musician, but my parents talked me out of that. So I demonstrated to them that I would show them by going to the extremely high-paying field of journalism.
And the fame and fortune that comes with it, right?
Yeah, well, for a few, you know, for the top 1 or 2%, there's that fame and fortune. I must say that one time while I was covering an event at the White House, Sam Donaldson asked me a question.
Wow.
Yeah, Sam was coming back from lunch and he was carrying a, a bag of what looked like French fries because the grease was coming through the brown paper bag. And he saw that there were a bunch of interviews going on, and he saw him, and he came over to me and he said, "What's going on here?" He didn't ask me on camera or anything, but he, you know, a lot of, I don't want to cast aspersions, but a lot of big TV journalists, print reporters have this feeling that they show up late and they're always asking you what's going on. So, you know, you can help them do their story.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say he asked you where the garbage can was.
No,
that's what I thought too.
Clearly he was going to consume what appeared to me to be a bit of unhealthy garbage, but oh well.
Or can you hold this for me? I have an interview to do.
Well, that has happened in my journalism career. I had that happen more than once. Oh, yeah. On a local level, and again, I don't want to cast aspersions, but they run the TV reporters ragged.
Yeah.
From one car crash to one silly community event. Sorry, I don't mean to be negative about it. And then when they show up at a real news event, they sometimes don't know why they're there. And so they make friends with the print reporters, and, you know, they kind of ask them, "So why are we here? What do you know about this? Who should I talk to?" I mean, I'm not, it's just the nature of the beast.
Sure. Yeah. That's interesting.
So Paul, tell us, what is the difference between, between the story and the brand, since, you know, your book talks about that.
I'm glad you asked that question, Cindy. As the subtitle of my book says, your story drives your brand. And a lot of companies, organizations, agencies, marketing gurus focus on things like the logo or the colors or the tagline. I'm not saying those things are not important. What I'm saying is there's something that comes before that that's more important than what color your logo is or what shape it is. And that is what we call your capital S story. And it's the story above all others. That's why it gets capital S, because it answers these critical questions: why somebody should buy from you, work for you, invest in you, or partner with you on a daily basis. In the field of marketing, in business in general, leaders tell many, many, many stories. This is the essential story, the one that defines the character and the very nature of the organization. So much research has been done that demonstrates that what ultimately decides the success of a company is not the color of the logo or the shape of, you know, their designs. It is what people believe to be the true character and nature of the organization. Can they trust it? Do they like it? Do they have an affinity with it? And that all comes from the organization's story.
Yeah.
So where's kind of like the starting point of that, of telling the story?
It starts at a very simple, but also a very high level. And the reason that I share those questions is because it's just as elemental as that. Can a CEO answer in one sentence why somebody should buy from them or why somebody should work for them? Of the four that I typically share, you know, including invest and partner, those are the ones that we see most often. And most frequently it's buy first, because folks look on marketing first as an effort to help drive sales. And if you can't answer that question, then how can you spend all kinds of money on marketing to go out and try and get people to buy what you do? Or today, with all the challenges we have with jobs going unfilled, how can you convince somebody to come work for you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's, and, you know, part of what I was reading in the book, in the capital S story, and this is something that I think that everybody learns from the beginning, you know, when you first start off in business, starting your own business, is the five burning questions.
Yes.
And to me, that is so important, because if you don't know what the purpose is of your organization, like you said, how will you explain that in one or two sentences? You know, people tell you about elevator pitches and make sure that yes. whenever you're networking, you have that all down pat. But I think it's a science to understanding what is going to resonate with your potential client, right?
Yes. Yeah, it absolutely is. And you just referenced one of the tools that we use. Our trademark process is called story crafting. And in story crafting, we have two phases. The first phase, which typically takes about 30 to 45 days, Kelly, is a process in which we uncover and develop this capital S story for a company. And we draw as much from sociology, psychology, as we do from marketing and uncovering that story. And perhaps we'll chat more about that. When we start the entire process, we don't start throwing around story terminology. We start by asking those questions that I've shared a couple of times in this episode, and then we start to ask more questions. We call those questions that you referenced the five burning questions, because we've learned over time that if you don't come up with good answers to those questions, you're not going to get anywhere. The whole place is just going to burn down. Yeah. And among those questions are, what's different about you than your competitors? What's the best way for you to reach the people you most want to reach? Oh, by the way, when you reach those people, what do you want them to do? What's your call to action? And there are a couple more questions that we frequently ask.
Wow. And I think the call to action thing is so important too, because there's times you're on a website or you're reading a social media post and it just drops off. You're like, what am I supposed to do now?
Exactly right. And you know, it's easy to click a like button, but likes don't do anything for the person who spent the time and effort to create the social media post, really. Right. That's what we call a vanity metric. It makes you feel good, but it doesn't do anything for you.
Yeah. So, you know, we're talking about stories and storytelling, and with everything being so digital, this like the last year, well, 18 months, I guess, 20 months, what changes have you seen, and why do you think that stories matter so much now, even more in a digital age?
Well, that's a very good question. What we've seen with storytelling and the need for storytelling is what we've seen in so many areas of life during this pandemic, and that's an acceleration in the need for understanding. Our digital age, the last 20 years, we are just overwhelmed with information. And when we're removed from environments where we can have face-to-face communication and where we can better read body language and we can interact in more of a in-the-real-world sort of scenario, we have to rely on some other techniques and approaches to come to understand the full meaning of our interactions. This is a place where story really can shine, because story is the original communications method. It relies solely and most importantly on the human brain. No batteries required. Storytelling predates any sort of digital environment, but it is also best attuned for the digital environment, because in an environment where there's a lot of distraction and a lot of noise, great storytelling is simple, it's direct, it's compelling, it's memorable, and the best stories are unique.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead, Sin. I thought you were going to say something.
So how do you help your clients craft that unique, memorable story?
That's a great question. Our process, as I said a bit ago, it relies on psychology and sociology as much as it does on marketing. The work of the psychoanalyst Carl Jung and the mythologist Joseph Campbell are very important in our work. And the reason why that's the case, these two gentlemen at different times came to the same realization, and that is that we as human beings, regardless of time or economic attainment, or where our culture might be, or what language we speak, we tell the same stories over and over again. These are archetypal stories. There are about a dozen of the most common ones that we see over and over again in literature and pop culture, in business. There are many more than that, though. These archetypes are baked into our brain. Carl Jung, the psychoanalyst, began practicing or was practicing during World War I in Switzerland. And Switzerland during World War I, as it was in World War II, was a neutral country while the war was raging in Europe. So what did that mean? That meant that people who were fleeing the war headed to Switzerland. And as a psychoanalyst with a couch, when folks laid down on that couch in Carl Jung's office, regardless of where they came from or what language they spoke, they were sharing the same stories over and over again. It led Jung to develop this concept he calls the collective unconscious. Some years later, Joseph Campbell, who, among many other books, wrote The Hero with a Thousand Faces, was trying to get a PhD, and it was the middle of the Depression, and he couldn't find a school who would take him for a PhD study. So he decided to travel around the world. And as he traveled around the world, he exposed himself to many different cultures. And guess what? He learned the same thing, that regardless of culture, language, or economic attainment, human beings all over the world were telling the same stories over and over again. They may have had different names for the characters, slightly different plot lines. They were the same stories. That's what led him to write his seminal book and to become such an authority on what people call the hero's journey, which is the most often cited, but not the only story that we see in human history. And what we do at our company is we dig into that deep, rich mother lode that's in our brains, these stories, and we help our clients identify a good archetype that aligns with the character and the nature of their organization. And then we fold in the specifics of what it is they do and how they do it, and we adapt that archetype so that when they're out there doing their marketing and their communication, they are relying on a story that's already in everybody's brains, the brains of everybody they need to reach. It's been adapted ever so slightly and accurately to reflect what it is they're there to talk to that person about. It just does so much for improving the comprehension and retention of the story and the organization, whether they're trying to sell or recruit talent, get investors, etc.
Wow,
that's fascinating.
That was going to be exactly what I said. That is fascinating. That's probably the most in-depth explanation of what a company does.
Yes.
That I think I've heard in a very long time.
Me too.
Because you are a storyteller, and you know how to tell your stories. Do you find that a certain type of person, it's easier to drag that story out of them than it is maybe others? You know how you always hear that, you know, engineers have a different kind of mind, and it's different whenever you work with an engineer for some reason. Like, do you ever find that it's, is it male, female? Is it by industry?
Well, it really depends on the organization and the story that you're trying to share. I'll give you an example. We have worked with many healthcare organizations. A good-sized healthcare organization needs to have a good CEO.
Yeah.
But when consumers are considering which healthcare provider to choose, who's a better storyteller, the doctor or the nurse who's going to actually deliver the care, or the CEO? Obviously, it's the caregiver, right? So we believe that great capital S stories must do three things. One, they must be authentic, rooted in fact. Two, you got to have a fluent storyteller. And just because the guy or gal at the top of the organizational chart has a certain title doesn't necessarily mean that's going to be the best storyteller. So from industry to industry, in the tech industry, a crazy inventor might be the right person to talk about why the product is great, but you don't want them running the company. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
So then when you get beyond that, sure, is it sometimes that one person rather than another by dint of personality or training might be a better storyteller? Yes, absolutely. But from a more general sense, the fluent storyteller is the person who's going to best share the organization's story. Sometimes it's because they're really good communicators. Sometimes it's because of what they do in the organization and what that represents to the organization. Sometimes it's a mix of both. The third thing, and this is critically important, you got to continually read the audience to make sure that they're engaged. And this is where so many marketing initiatives fail. Think about COVID. If an organization is communicating in exactly the same way that it was in 2019 and 2021, they are really going to create some cognitive dissonance. You know, that's that term that describes when you're seeing something and it just doesn't fit. It doesn't seem right. And that happens a lot of times when there's not a global pandemic. Marketing efforts go out there and they're just kind of tossed on the waves of human consciousness. And there's no effort to say, what do people really think about this? Are we sharing the right story? Are we sharing it in the right place? What's the feedback we're getting? Are we even bothering to measure the feedback?
Wow. What's a good way, Paul, to measure the feedback?
That's a great question. In a digital sense, there are actions that people can take. So if I, to take Kelly's example, if I have a great social media post, I should have a call to action in there. And if people click through and do whatever I want them to do, then that's a measure. More frequently, what you're looking for are people in your audience to pick up your story and retell it, which is another reason why it's important to have a strategic, simple, and clear story that people can remember. At our company, we do a lot of work with B2B organizations. B2B sales are difficult. There's frequently a buying committee. You can't just sell whatever it is you're doing to one person. There's a buying committee. It might be 10 or 11 people. That story has to travel through the synapses of 11 people. Yeah. It needs to be repeatable. It needs to be understandable. And one great way of measuring it is when person number 10 or 11, you remember the old childhood game of telephone.
I was thinking that, yes.
You want that story still to be accurate. And right, there are ways of asking people to feed back to you what your story is. A good measure in social media, obviously, is that people are sharing your content. How are they positioning it when they share it? Are they understanding your story? Are they repeating your story?
Yeah, because that takes you back to, you know, what are people writing in the the text of what they're saying about your post. Like, they can share your post. They can share your story, share your blog. But are they writing something that's accurate?
Yes.
That goes with that. You know, it's the whole thing. And Cindy and I have discussed this many times that, you know, it costs nothing to share a friend or a colleague's business post on social media, or, you know, to write a nice review, to be able to say, hey, you know, I worked with Paul's company. WordWrite really did right by me. You know, this is what they did. This is what they provide. And I think that sometimes that's overlooked. A lot of times it's just the simplicity of understanding what your friends and family and colleagues do.
I completely agree, Kelly. It's a very good point.
Wow. That's really interesting.
It is.
I love it. So also, go ahead.
You know, going back, Kel, just whenever you and I've talked about referrals, you know, kind of springboarding off of that comment about sharing the social media and saying, you know, hey, I had this great experience with Paul's company. Reach out to him. Just something short and sweet, forwarding a social post could be very, very helpful.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Most definitely. So if you had to choose one thing to do in your company every single day, what would it be? Would it be the PR part of it? Would it be the storytelling part of it? What is your favorite thing to do for clients?
It would be the storytelling part, without a doubt. And everything from this is the second, I did a talk at lunchtime today, evangelizing the concept of storytelling. I mean, that's the life's work right there. It is just critically important. And, I love doing that. I love working with clients to do that. We're working with a client right now that's a very deep oncology focused biopharma company. And I sat with one of our team members today, and he had some great ideas on what their archetype might be. And just sitting there and talking about a company or an organization and how we can help them increase their success in communicating and marketing by grabbing on to this elemental story is just very exciting to me.
Wow. I'm kind of speechless after that one. That's really interesting. That really is. I don't know, Sin, what do you think? Do you think we're ready for the 412?
I think we might be. Yes.
Okay.
This is a very important part of the podcast. This is how we tie in our business guests with some food items.
Yes.
So, Cindy, do you want to explain the 412?
Sure. So, and part of the reason why I'm going to explain the 412, Paul, is because in a previous episode, Kelly had a flub and during the 412. And, you know, Kelly and I both can laugh at ourselves whenever we make faux pas. You
know? We have to.
So Kelly actually called that out on social media today, and she posted hashtag find the flub. So anyway, so circling back to the 412. The 412, as you may know, and other Pittsburghers know, that was one of the very first area codes here in Pittsburgh. And so Kelly and I, being native Pittsburghers, we wanted to tie in, you know, the Pittsburgh theme here to the Biz, Bevs, and Bites podcast. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to do it in a unique way that also tied into the food element of it. So, sure. Kel, go ahead.
All right. So, Paul, we're going to ask you three different questions regarding your favorites.
Okay.
So, for the four, we would like you to tell us four items that are must-haves in your salad.
Uh-huh. Well, I like fresh greens. Mm-hmm. I'll take that over iceberg. Almost always cucumber. Mm-hmm. Here's one for you. Jicama. I really like jicama.
Oh, that's unique.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I like peppers. Now, I'd prefer banana peppers, but if I can't get those, a nice rich red or orange pepper, nice.
Same with me. Red, orange, and yellow. I'm not a big fan of the green. Not a big fan of that green.
Yeah.
Pepper.
Yeah, not me either.
So what is one food, Paul, that you absolutely positively will not eat?
Do not feed me mushrooms. I do not understand the attraction for consuming fungus.
I know.
I mean, think about it. You know, when people have fungus growing on their bodies, it's a bad thing. Why is it then when we scrape fungus off the forest floor, that suddenly becomes a delicacy? I do not understand that.
I get it. I do love mushrooms, though. I don't like them raw. I like them sauteed or cooked on a pizza. But like a raw mushroom to me is just weird. It's
my wife loves mushrooms. A good portobello. Mm-hmm. I mean, she will really enjoy that. And she enjoys eating it within about 3 inches of my face and telling me how good it is.
I love that.
So she enjoys taunting you with.
Oh yeah, she does. Yes.
Fungus.
She does.
Oh, that's funny. So then the last question is the two. We want to know two items on your pizza.
I like pepperoni. That's a mainstay. That's like a foundation. It's hard for me to conceive of a pizza with cheese and dough and not pepperoni. Mm-hmm. And then there's a number of places in town and one of our clients is Caliente Pizza and Draft House.
Oh, yeah.
And they have a good barbecue chicken that goes on some of their pizzas. And they have a very interesting pizza that has none of the things we talked about. It's called the Meemaw. It's an award-winning pizza.
I've heard of that.
Yeah, it has prosciutto on it and some other great things. And anyway, pepperoni and barbecue chicken. I really got to have those. And now I'm thinking about the Meemaw. Sorry.
Now you'll be getting a pizza either later tonight or tomorrow, right?
Probably. There's a pizza in my future somewhere.
That's right.
Treat the office. Treat your staff tomorrow to a barbecue chicken pizza. That does sound amazing.
I think that would disappear quickly.
Yes. Well, Paul, as we wrap up, can you think of anything else that you would really want to cement into our listeners' minds about storytelling, about word right? And maybe tell us real quickly, because we'll put it on our social channels and in the blog, but where people can find you.
Great. I'll start there. You can find me at www.capitalsstory.com. That'll take you right to the information on my book. Or at Word Write, word like you speak, write like you do with a pen, PR.com. Either one of those two, capitalsstory.com or wordwritepr.com. I think it's important for the audience to think about the stories that they tell themselves all day long. Human beings, we process every single thing that happens to us all day long. We walk down the street, we see a friend, they don't say hi to us. We tell ourselves a story. Well, they're mad at me because blah, blah, blah. We go to work and we have something great happen to us and our brains tell us a story about why that great thing happened. That's because I shared my idea in that meeting in this way. I need to do that again. My point is this. Stories are everywhere. The kinds of stories we talked about today are of a certain type and a certain purpose. But we are storytelling animals. In fact, there's a professor at Washington Jefferson named Jonathan Gottschall, and he's written an excellent book called The Storytelling Animal. That's what we do. That's a big part of what makes us human beings. So storytelling, it's natural, it's powerful, and it's a life's work for me.
That is fantastic. Yes. What a way to end it. Paul Fariga, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
You are so welcome. Kelly, Cindy, thanks for having me.
Thanks, Paul, for being here with us. We really appreciate it.
All right, ladies and gents, we'll see you next time on Biz, Bevs, and Bites.
See everyone. We'll talk to you soon.
Hi, it's Kelly Commander with K2 Creative and PR. Did you know that there are over 4 billion social media users worldwide and that 74% of Americans are active on at least one social media platform? Sure, you've heard that content is king, but most people don't know how to write effective content to be included in a public relations campaign. K2 Creative and PR has you covered for everything content related, from social media management to public relations campaigns and more. Visit k2creativellc.com for more information. K2 Creative and PR, we make your message matter.
Thank you for listening to Biz, Bevs, and Bites. The podcast is brought to you by Cindy Ellick Marketing Group and K2 Creative and PR. Come back and join us for the happiest hour. Reserve a table by subscribing to the podcast on all major sites and make sure to leave a review on iTunes. You can learn more about the show, your hosts, and how to be featured by visiting bizbevsbites.com.